to Resounds, arts and culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West.
Musicians Keller Paulson, Eric Olson, and Parker Brown spent a lot of time together. They've played music together in a variety of bands throughout the years that they've lived in Billings, and they are all adjunct faculty members at Sheridan College. The three musicians carpool weekly from Billings to Sheridan to teach in the music department.
On those drives and in after-hours jams, they began a songwriting collaboration that became Big Sky Trio. They're about to release their first jazz album, Short Stories, which was successfully crowdfunded by nearly 60 backers who pledged more than $4,000 to help bring this project to life. Welcome to the studio, Parker Brown, Eric Olson, Keller Paulson. So glad to have you guys here today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
We have musicians in the studio, very diverse musical instruments and backgrounds. What brought the three of you guys together?
This is Parker, and I've been living in Montana for a little while now since I graduated high school and playing around. Eric Olson had just moved to town about a year ago and had recruited Keller Paulson as well from Colorado. We've been friends long distance, and then once they moved up here, we all ended up getting a job at Sheridan College teaching adjunctly, and just started playing music after we'd teach and while we were up there, and kind of started a little jazz trio.
Ah, so yeah, you've come together to form Big Sky Trio, and you guys are just about to release your first jazz album, and it sounds like this album was sort of sprung just from your time hanging out together.
Keller here.
Hi, Keller.
So we had all played together in various forms in quite a few other bands. And I think for us, this trio was kind of an outlet to play more than just jazz standards. We all kind of had our own compositions, and we wanted to combine all of our tunes together and especially kind of have a unique sound with it that encompasses, you know, all of our playing. And
so the album is called Short Stories. Tell us a little bit about what's on the album.
Yeah, Short Stories features a bunch of original compositions from all three of us, Keller, Parker, and myself. It's mostly original compositions, but also some covers of famous jazz standards. We kind of took this like unique approach with arranging all the tunes, so I want to say that it's a little bit more modern than you would normally hear these jazz tunes being played like. So there's two jazz standards that we're covering on this album, and the rest is all original music. One of them, if we didn't arrange it, it would sound like just this old school swing tune, and it kind of sounds more like a hard rock song after we got done with it. So, yeah, it's a little bit different, that's for sure.
You guys work with familiar forms, classic jazz influences like Miles Davis and Bill Evans, you've credited for some of your influences, but also played around with some new inspirations like the modern stylings of Robert Glasper, for instance. I imagine you all have different backgrounds and musical tastes. So how did you merge those to create this album?
Parker here. What's interesting about the three of us is that we really enjoy all of the same styles of music, everyone to certain variances of degrees. But if you could say like, oh man, I really dig this hip hop album, we've all heard it or are like heard something similar to it or open to it. Or, you know, all of us coming from an academic background as well, going to school for music and growing up around music with music teachers or musicians in our family. So what's neat is we could come in here and like have a concept for a tune, and everybody, just because the well is deep with listening and influences, we could just access that. information and make the tune kind of wherever the composer wanted it to be heading. We do like a few things at the end of tunes that are hip hop influences. We call them bonus tracks. And love jams. Mm-hmm. And cool. So those are little nuggets in the album.
Little bonuses.
Little bonus tracks.
And Parker, you've described the album as technical, yet an emotional style of music. And it's an all-instrumental album that, quote, gets under your skin.
Yeah, I feel like that the emotional aspect of the music really, and it being instrumental, it can hit the listener without any preconceived notions or preparations. It kind of just breaks that blood-brain barrier and gets to the heart, I think, because of the depth of the influences. And I hope that other people can feel that.
I want to ask you guys about your influences, because I know, Keller, you mentioned Ronnie Bedford, who has been around Montana and Wyoming for so long and such a big influence. So who did you school with or train with that influenced sort of what you play and how you think about music?
Obviously, you said Ronnie Bedford. I met him when I was in probably seventh grade, and that was huge influence for me all the way through until his death when I was a sophomore, I believe. After that, too, moving to Colorado, I had a lot of influences just in the Colorado scene. Not necessarily from mentors or teachers, but a lot of people I was playing with. It's a way to like cut my teeth and especially kind of learn how to write and kind of lead a group while I was down there as well. One person in particular that I got to work with a decent amount, especially writing, was Ron Miles, who is a great cornet player. He plays with the Bad Plus quite a bit and leads his own groups. And so that was pretty great for me.
Eric, how about you?
Well, actually, you know, my biggest musical influence was certainly my dad. Both of my parents are music teachers, actually, so I got to credit my mom, too. But my dad was a professional musician, still is. He had this old-timey swing band in Cody, Wyoming, of all places. And I started playing in that when I was a young kid on the saxophone. Probably was like 7th or 8th grade or something like that. And I kind of developed a love for all these songs that they were playing. Stuff like All of Me, you know, Little Brown Jug, Pennsylvania 65,000, stuff like that, you know. That's kind of where I cut my teeth when I was, you know, learn how to play, was in that band.
But you are primarily piano.
That's right. Organ. Well, I wasn't for a long time. I wanted to grow up to be a saxophone player.
Those are different instruments.
Yeah, they definitely are.
What happened to that dream?
Oh, man. Well, what happened was nobody wants a saxophone player in their band, and everybody wants a piano player, you know, so that's actually exactly how it went down. I went to college for saxophone, and once I moved up here, everybody wanted me to play piano and organ. I actually played a lot of organ in the Billings music scene for a long time. And
you famously haul around an old Hammond organ and get that thing up on stage.
Yeah, I put the Hammond organ in my back pocket and walk with it down to the gig, and then just toss it up on the old stage, and it's just that simple. Yeah, but for real, though, that thing weighs about 400 pounds, and it's no
fun. Yeah,
it's
pretty impressive to see it when you bust it out.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, I really enjoy playing the piano around the music scene. I don't miss the saxophone particularly, but it's been a lot of fun.
Parker, how about you?
Well, I also was influenced by my dad. He was a musician. He still is a musician, but was a musician in Billings before I was born and as I was growing up. And I just remember being around him and Ron Schuster and Bob Brown and all these guys, you know, watching them play in our basement and stuff like that. And that was from a really early age, just knowing that that was what I wanted to do. Little did I know what that entailed, like as you grow up. But fortunately, I got to do that and pursued that dream. And when I moved to Billings, Montana, from the encouragement of Steve Brown, we had our band Tyler Burnett, and it sort of like propelled me into that direction. And there being a lack of bass players in college at MSUB, I picked up the upright bass just to do it in jazz band because I loved the sound. And some of my, you know, favorite music was Charles Mingus's band, and the bass was just driving a lot of that music that I was listening to. So I picked it up, and oddly enough, one of my early gigs was with Ronnie Bedford in his band. And my first gig playing with Ronnie Bedford, little Eric Olson was also on the gig playing piano, and his dad was also in the group too. So it's interesting, you know, meeting Keller years later, him also being heavily influenced by Ronnie.
Well, and Keller, you have that familial background as well. Your father's a music teacher. He was my high school band teacher.
Yeah.
Keller and I are both Casper kids.
First chair flute, right?
Yes. Yeah. I battled it out week after week for first chair.
This is indeed a small world because Parker, your father played at a summer gig I had in my backyard when I was in high school.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Band. Police came and had to shut us down.
Of course they did.
Small world.
I love it. Yeah, so I think that, you know, to wrap that up with influences, that's pretty much where what inspired me to get going, and people giving me a chance all around, you know, Jeff Troxel getting me in bands, and, you know, Brad Edwards and Alex Nauman moving to the scene, and just sort of one thing leads to another and it grows and grows. And I was fortunate enough to study with a bass player that I admired via Skype for a year, named John Hamer. And he kind of helped me get inspired and develop a sound better and things like that to pursue jazz music on a deeper level.
And it's brought you all together to put this first jazz album out. And you launched a Kickstarter to help fund the last part of the album, the mastering and the packaging.
Mm-hmm. And artwork as well.
And the project was fully funded. You have almost 60 backers who pledged more than $4,000 to help bring this project to life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about having the support of these backers without a product yet for them to consume?
I think it speaks to the generosity of the community and wanting to see us bring something to life and the trust there. It's just a really beautiful thing to me, and I know that everybody here is affected by that, you know, friends and family as well as people that have supported us by coming to our gigs and encouraging us that way. It's pretty incredible when the money starts rolling in, and it's a bit, and you're like, okay, yeah. And it's cool too because you don't want to disappoint them, so it gives you kind of a push to see it through and to bring it to everybody. And it brings a level of excitement.
Do you like the crowdfunding nature of musical projects? Do you feel like that's been a good way to bring these musical recordings to life?
From my experience, because we actually did an album together, my album, We Were Young, that came out 2 years ago, I did a crowdfunding thing for that, Kickstarter
Parker
as
Brown
well.
And the Bleeding Hearts, mm-hmm, is your band.
Yes, that was funded. And I think it's a great way to not only generate interest in something that didn't really exist before, you sort of create a buzz about it, which is nice. People get to be a part of the experience and help you be creative.
Yeah, because some of the perks are a private concert with you guys. I think there's some other goofy things if you were willing to pony up the cash. Tell us about a few of those
hats,
perks.
T-shirts.
No
goofier.
No physical merchandise except for the album.
Dinner date, maybe?
Dinner date is on there. This is Keller here, by the way. I'm a little bummed because I sent Parker and Eric both this great list of perk ideas. And I think they used like maybe two of them.
Ooh, I want to know what was not on the list.
Which, maybe I should bust them out. But one of the ones that was used was I think it was like $40. If you pledge $40, you get the CD. And also a postcard written by us after we've had a few tall cans to lubricate the help with writer's block.
Oh, those would be some interesting postcards. How many people took you up on that?
I think it was like 4 to 6 people.
And yeah, like those are going to be some great postcards.
Yeah. So yeah, decent amount.
And we had two people. I was surprised we had two people hire us, did the $600 pledge to have us play at their party or event. And then we had almost 10 people want a private lesson with us, which could really be anything for an hour. So we're kind of interested to see what ends up happening.
The album was recorded in Powell, Wyoming at the college down there. I didn't know there was a studio. Tell us about the recording and that experience.
Yeah, there's actually a really nice studio down Northwest College in Powell, Wyoming. And it's kind of nostalgic going back there because Keller Paulson and I both went to school there when we were kids. We got access to these state-of-the-art microphones and equipment. There was a really nice grand piano down there. And we had a studio engineer. His name was Monty Nichols. He's the audio engineer out at Tippett Rise, I think. And he is serious business. He did some really great work with the album, recording and mixing it so far.
Yeah, actually, regarding Monty, he was my first roommate in college. And I'll just say every single night he'd be up until like 3 or 4 a.m. just mixing. Every single night.
Yeah, he's just one of those dudes that's really dedicated to his craft, you know? Kind of like what we're doing, but he's just on the, you know, the audio side of things. So it was a pleasure to work with him, that's for sure.
Now all three of you are teaching. What's the difference between performing and then having to take both your talent and your experience and translate that to a student?
Yeah, Keller here. So I think with teaching is we're, one, trying to give, you know, new musicians the facility and kind of like foundation of what they need to perform. But basically we're taking our own experiences and trying to like give to them like a way to perform, like how to like be in front of people and play their instrument. So it's kind of empathetic most of the time. Actually, Eric was talking about this the other day. A lot of what we talk to our students about are our own personal failures and faults that we're like communicating through them, you know?
Years of failures to keep students busy.
Yeah.
What kinds of lessons are you guys teaching? You teach through Allied Music, which has a community of students and teachers that I believe, Parker, you formed 8 years ago?
Yeah, Alex Nauman and I started that in the humble downtown location. and it just started growing. And when Eric moved to town, he started teaching piano and saxophone and reed instruments out of the other spare room that we were teaching out of. And eventually we moved to a new, more professional location just off of Avenue D. And Keller ended up joining, and Philip Griffin is also a part of the Allied Music crew. So we have 5 teachers and everyone teaching various levels from beginner to advanced and all sorts of instruments from drums, piano, woodwinds, banjo, guitar, and drums. Did I say drums already? I might have said drums.
So more drums. Those are more in drums. Terms of private lessons, but mm-hmm. aren't all three of you teaching at Sheridan College?
We are.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the adjunct life.
This is Eric's. Yeah. So I started teaching down at Sheridan College about 5 years ago or so. And
what brought you to teaching there?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but to shorten it up a bit, my wife got a job in Sheridan, and I kind of fell into a piano and woodwind position there. I walked in a day before school started and interviewed for the position and got it. So how these guys got involved?
Somewhat spurious sounding hiring process. Sheridan College is a really nice place. So let's hear it for Sheridan College, right?
No, it's a good story because the Sheridan College has changed a lot since Eric first started there. You should.
Yeah, we were, okay. So the Sheridan College music department didn't look like it used to. That's for sure. They were teaching out of this rundown building, and I think they had maybe 1 or 2 full-time faculty down there. And when I got involved, they were right in the process of getting some money collected up for building this brand new building that they have down there right now, which is just awesome. I think it was like a $20 million thing.
Yeah, they've invested a lot in expanding the campus and building new buildings.
It's beautiful. So let me tell you how I got these two involved, Parker and Keller. I was making that drive back between between Sheridan and Billings once a week, and let's just say it was sad. It was a lonely drive, and I was like, man, it'd be fun if we got some Billings guys involved down here at Sheridan College, and especially so then I can have somebody to talk to for the 4-hour drive or whatever. Also because they kind of know what they're doing, I guess.
Commute down and back in a day.
Yeah, I usually go down in the morning and then come back at night. So we got Keller and Parker teaching down there now, and we're kind of the jazz faculty down at Sheridan College. And we've been teaching at different camps. And what's the camp down there called again?
It might be something different now.
Last year it was called Jazz and the Bighorns. And it was a really cool camp. We went up into the Bighorn Mountains and had like this jazz musicians retreat going on over there. And I think we had 12 students or something like that. And there were five teachers. So it was like really one-on-one experience with these students. And it was in the middle of the Bighorn Mountains, which are beautiful.
With all this teaching that you guys are in the midst of, how do you make time for your personal projects? Parker, what do you think?
Well, I think it's as more things come up that you're inspired by, you have to really learn how to prioritize and follow one thing through. And then we were just talking about that earlier. You kind of get, ADD or, shiny thing, vision, and then want to do another thing. Like we were talking about the outlaw country band that we
Yeah. How many bands are you in now?
Well, we're in, we cover a pretty good number of bands in the area, from country bands to freelance jazz gigs and, backing people up and accompanying people. But, it's a learning process, I think, and we're all just trying to get better at being focused and create things that bring us a lot of joy and that we can put our integrity into and feel like we have some stuff that's really ours. That's sort of the inspiration.
Keller, how about you? How do you find time for personal projects in addition to, gigging and adjuncting and all of the other things on your plate? Bartending, yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing the hustle.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as you know, especially nowadays, money for the arts isn't super fruitful. So everything's a juggle, And especially recently, I've kind of been struggling with the idea of showing up for your work every day to eventually have some sort of product versus getting the spark of creativity and like hammering that out while it's there.
Yeah, it's really hard to hold yourself accountable to create on a daily basis when you know that inspiration isn't always going to be there. And when you don't necessarily work an 8-to-5, how are you holding your own life in check when everyone else seems to be, doing fine, having health insurance, getting up at 8 a.m. Monday through Friday? Yeah. That's not your life.
Yeah. So I think for us especially, we're doing all these different projects and teaching on top of that. I think the big thing is whatever we're really inspired by at the moment, we're pretty hyper-focused on. And that doesn't necessarily depreciate anything else we're doing, but that kind of like, you focus on one thing and then other things maybe for a week or a month, like chill out for a minute and then you get re-inspired by another project. And so everything just kind of slowly, builds up, like filling up a glass with water, It's just... I don't know.
Bunch of glasses of water.
And did you feel that spark with Big Sky Trio? Is that sort of where this jazz album was created?
Yeah, I think this trio, especially for Montana jazz, not that I've, delved into a lot of like jazz recordings in Montana, but from what I have heard, I kind of get the idea that most stuff is kind of like straight ahead jazz, like standards and stuff like that. And then really a few of the people who have like broke away from that is like Alex Nauman stuff, which is more of a like organ trio kind of rock jazz influence. And I think for like the term modern jazz, this is probably the closest thing to that.
All right, guys. Well, we are really excited for short stories to come out. Sounds like you're in the final process of getting it ready. When can people expect to be able to have that album in their hands?
We're shooting for the end of March at the moment.
Right on. I wanted to recircle to something that Keller was just talking about. You mentioned Alex and this modern jazz, you know, fusion that's going on here in Billings. And for the listening audience that maybe doesn't get to experience that as often, there's something really special happening here. And I think that when you see it, you know, every Sunday at Walker's, you kind of lose track of how actually incredibly talented our jazz scene and our musicians here are. I just am really honored to be able to experience that. You guys are doing an amazing job of sharing that new modern world of jazz with a pretty small community.
I gotta add too, it's great like how inviting all of the musicians are too, you know, like no one really has a big chip on their shoulder or anything like that. And I mean, that was one of the first things I noticed being in Colorado is, quote, the vibe, unquote, you know, which is like pretty cutthroat, you know. It's more of like a competition.
Yeah, there's a lot of people there, there's a lot more sounds, and a lot more competition. How do you continue to remain relevant and fresh in an area that is sort of removed from the huge swimming pool of music out there?
Well, I think in this age, you know, we are more connected than you would think because of stuff like, you know, YouTube, Instagram, things like that. So we're still part of this community of artists. I think, Keller, you got some mad Instagram game going on, right? you tell us about that.
Yeah.
You're very witty with the comments.
Yeah, I think Instagram especially, I mean, Spotify and like Apple Music is great to like stay connected with music coming out. But Instagram is, I've found quite a few like up and coming musicians through Instagram that's like insane. Actually, this one of the first finds was this Todd Pritchard guy out of Pennsylvania. He plays guitar, kind of like neo soul guitar, and whew, good stuff. I don't know, just stuff like that like helps kind of stoke the fire, you know.
Sure, and it sounds like you brought a lot of that into this new album, so that we're hearing not only the classically trained backgrounds that you all have, but this this new take on a very old form of music. Right on. Well, thank you so much for being in the studio. It's wonderful to have you, and we will have all of the information on our website, ypradio.org.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Anna Page, Corby Skinner, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.